René Descartes, the father of modern philosophy. Hello and welcome to our beginner series on Western moral philosophy. Today we travel to the early 17th century to meet René Descartes, a French thinker whose quest for certain knowledge revolutionized how we approach philosophy and even ourselves. Descartes, 1596 to 1650, is often called the father of modern philosophy, famous for declaring cogito ergo sum, I think, therefore I am. You might have heard that phrase, but behind it is a fascinating story of a man who dared to doubt everything he had been taught in order to build a new foundation for truth. In this episode, we'll explore Descartes' life, from his youthful days as a curious student and soldier to the moment of inspiration when he began his radical method of doubt, and onward through his years of writing and discovery. And we'll delve into Descartes' ideas, his insistence on using reason as our most reliable tool, his mind-body dualism, which split the material world from the world of thought, and yes, his approach to morality, because even as he questioned the cosmos, Descartes also thought deeply about how to live a good and happy life guided by the light of reason. So get comfortable and imagine a cold winter in 1619 where a lone Frenchman sits by a stove in a German village, pondering how to be sure of anything as we embark on the journey of René Descartes, the philosopher who found truth within his own mind and forever changed intellectual history. René Descartes was born in 1596 in the small town of La Haye-en-Touraine, now renamed Descartes in his honor, in the Loire Valley of France. He came from a minor noble family and received a rigorous Jesuit education at the College of La Flèche. As a boy, Descartes was extraordinarily bright, but also sickly. Due to his delicate health, he was often allowed to stay in bed late, a habit he later claimed was the source of his habit of intense morning reflection. By the time he left school in 1614, Descartes had mastered the scholastic curriculum of Latin, logic, philosophy, and mathematics, but he felt unsatisfied. He later wrote that despite all his learning, I found myself involved in so many doubts and errors that I was convinced I had advanced no farther than the discovery at every turn of my own ignorance. Hungry for real certainty, young Descartes looked beyond the classroom. In his late teens and early 20s, Descartes led a somewhat restless life. For a period, he volunteered as a soldier, not so much out of patriotic fervor, but because, like many gentlemen of his time, he sought adventure and the chance to see the wider world. He served in armies in the Netherlands and in Bavaria, Germany. It was during this time, on a cold night in November 1619, that a legendary event in Descartes' life took place. Stationed in Bavaria, Descartes shut himself in a room heated by a stove to escape the winter chill. There, over the course of a single night, he experienced a series of three intense dreams or visions that he felt were almost prophetic. By his own later account, one of those dreams showed him being buffeted by a terrifying whirlwind that pushed him toward a church, which he read as a sign he was under the guidance of the divine. In another dream, he was presented with a dictionary and a book of Latin poetry. He interpreted this as a message that he should unite scientific knowledge, the dictionary, and wisdom, the poetry, in his work. Upon waking from these visions, Descartes felt an almost sacred sense of purpose, convinced that a higher spirit had set him on the path of truth-seeking. He believed that the wonderful science he was destined to create would be a universal method to attain certainty in knowledge. This quasi-mystical experience prompted Descartes to leave soldiering and devote himself entirely to philosophy and science. For the next two decades, Descartes traveled around Protestant Europe, which was relatively tolerant of free inquiry. The Netherlands, in particular, became his home base, and he pursued his intellectual work in peace. He deliberately kept a low profile, sharing his ideas cautiously to avoid the fate of thinkers like Galileo, who in 1633 had been condemned by the Catholic Church for his scientific views. Nonetheless, Descartes corresponded widely with other scholars through letters, often via the scientific network of Father Mersenne in Paris, and gradually, he prepared to publish his thoughts. In 1637, he released a groundbreaking work in French, Discourse on the Method of Rightly Conducting One's Reason and of Seeking Truth in the Sciences. This book is part autobiography, part manifesto. In it, Descartes lays out a simple rule: accept nothing as true unless you recognize it to be evidently such. He famously begins the work by saying, "Good sense is the best distributed thing in the world, for everyone thinks they have enough of it." He then explains that he decided to sweep away all his prior opinions and build from scratch using reason alone. To do this, he employed systematic doubt. He outlines in the Discourse and later in his more formal Latin work, The Meditations, 1641, a process of methodic doubt. He would doubt anything that could possibly be doubted until he reached something absolutely indubitable. So Descartes starts doubting. He doubts the evidence of his senses, since our senses sometimes deceive us. For example, a straight stick looks bent in water, or distant objects look small. So anything sensed might conceivably be false. He doubts even the existence of a physical world. Perhaps life is just a dream. He realizes that when dreaming, we often are convinced the dream is real. He then takes doubt to its extreme by imagining that perhaps an all-powerful malicious demon is manipulating his perceptions and thoughts, creating an illusory external world, even making him go wrong on simple arithmetic. In the face of such radical, all-encompassing doubt, what, if anything, is left? Descartes finds one thing that withstands even the most hyperbolic doubt: the existence of himself as a thinking entity. Even if a demon were deceiving him about everything, someone must be experiencing the deception, namely himself. Even if he doubts his own existence, the very act of doubting confirms that there is a thinking I doing the doubting. Thus comes his eureka moment: cogito ergo sum, I think, therefore I am. It's crucial to note that Descartes isn't saying I think, so I exist as a logical syllogism. Rather, he's reporting a fundamental, self-evident intuition. He directly experiences his own mind in the act of thinking, and this existence is undeniable. In his 1641 Meditations, he refines it to I think, I am, emphasizing it as an irreducible fact rather than a deduction. This cogito, the certainty of the thinking self, becomes the new starting point for all of Descartes' philosophy. From it, he then attempts to rebuild knowledge. The next steps, which are more controversial, involve proving that a perfect God exists. He reasons roughly that the idea of a perfect infinite being must have a cause at least as real as itself, and that cause could only be God, and that this God, being good, would not let him be deceived about things he clearly and distinctly perceives. This, in Descartes' system, guarantees that the external world is real, and that mathematics and basic logic can be trusted, because God isn't a trickster demon. Once God and the world are affirmed, Descartes systematically explains physical nature by mechanistic principles, laying groundwork for modern physics, and explains human nature as a union of a mind, an immaterial thinking substance, and a body, a material extended substance. This is Descartes' famous dualism. Mind and body are distinct in essence, though they interact. He speculated the pineal gland in the brain might be the point of contact. Now, where is morality in all this? Descartes is best known for epistemology and metaphysics, but he did have a moral thought. Notably, in the Discourse on Method, right after he describes demolishing his beliefs with radical doubt, he acknowledges that one can't suspend acting in life while thinking is suspended, so he adopts a provisional moral code to live by while rebuilding knowledge. This code consisted of 3 or 4 maxims: obey the laws and customs of his country and religion, and follow moderate opinions, neither the most radical nor most conservative. Essentially, keep to the common sense middle ground. 2. Be firm and decisive in action, even if uncertain. Once you choose a course, stick to it, because inaction and vacillation cause more harm. Here Descartes echoes Stoic and military virtues. 3. Try to conquer oneself rather than fortune. That is, rather than try to make the world exactly as we wish, focus on mastering our own desires and accepting things that are out of our control. This is straight from Stoic ethics, resembling Epictetus's advice. And sometimes, a 4th maxim is included. 4. Devote one's life to cultivating reason and advancing truth, which for Descartes meant the project of science and philosophy he was undertaking. This provisional morality chose Descartes as quite conservative in practice. He wasn't going to flout social or religious conventions, while privately he questioned everything. It also shows his Stoic bent. Transform your desires rather than the world, a recipe for contentment. Descartes intended, after solving theoretical questions, to write more on ethics. In fact, he likened all philosophy to a tree. Metaphysics are the roots, physics the trunk, and the branches are the applied sciences of medicine, mechanics, and morals, the highest and most perfect fruit of wisdom. However, he died before elaborating a full ethical system. What we do have are letters and a late work, The Passions of the Soul, 1649, which delve into psychology and virtue. In these, Descartes presents a Stoic-influenced moral philosophy. Virtue, for him, ultimately consists in the firm will to do what reason deems best. He identifies a master virtue, which he calls generosité, generosity or nobility of soul. Roughly, the combination of self-respect and benevolence that comes from knowing that only your will, your moral choice, truly belongs to you and is truly worthy of esteem. A person with generosité, Descartes says, values themselves properly, neither arrogant nor self-loathing, and thus is internally free and inclined to help others. This concept shows Descartes bringing together his ideas of reason, will, and emotion. The rational control of the passions leads to inner freedom and virtue. He writes, for example, that while the passions, like love, hate, joy, sadness, desire, are natural and even useful, we must guide them with reason. I have always observed that the most devout persons are those who love God with their whole hearts rather than those who fear hell. In other words, a positive, rationally informed passion, love of good, is better motivation than fear or superstition. Descartes believed that through understanding the causes of our passions, which he largely explained in physiological terms, he thought of the body as a machine, we could attain mastery over them. He was an advocate of moderation and deliberate control of one's impulses, not to suppress emotions entirely, but to govern them with understanding. In his personal life, Descartes exemplified a fairly virtuous, modest existence, at least from the evidence we have. He never married, though he did have a daughter, from a relationship with a Dutch servant woman. He felt great sorrow when that little girl died at the age of 5. He was by all accounts polite, witty, and keen not to offend, which partly explains why he tried to publish in Protestant countries or anonymously to avoid Catholic censorship. Indeed, after his death, the church did place Descartes' works on the index of prohibited books in 1663, mainly due to certain theological points, like his dualism being seen as conflicting with the doctrine of the soul's unity with the body. In 1649, Descartes accepted an invitation from Queen Christina of Sweden to come to Stockholm and tutor her in philosophy. The arrangement did not suit him. The queen was a demanding student who insisted on lessons at 5 a.m. in the cold winter. Within a few months, the 53-year-old philosopher fell ill. Legend says the harsh schedule and weather triggered it, and died, likely of pneumonia. It's a bit poetic, if tragic, that the great rationalist who valued warm reflection in bed met his end by being forced into an irrational routine in the freezing dark. René Descartes' legacy in moral philosophy is perhaps not as direct as, say, an Aristotle or a Kant who wrote explicit ethical treatises, but it's significant in a few ways. First, his method of doubt instilled a spirit of questioning that became fundamental to the Enlightenment and modern scientific ethics. He taught thinkers to ask, "Is this really certain?" That attitude can be seen as morally valuable in combating prejudice and blind dogma. Second, Descartes' clear separation of mind and body had implications for morality. It underlined the idea of the rational soul as the locus of moral judgment, somewhat elevating the role of reason in ethics, perhaps even to an extreme, as later feminists and philosophers would critique the devaluation of emotion. Third, Descartes, through his emphasis on cogito and the subjective viewpoint, set the stage for modern notions of conscience and self-awareness in ethics. When we say today that one must follow their conscience or reason independently through a moral issue, we are, in a sense, walking the Cartesian path of relying on one's own rational reflection rather than external authority alone. And finally, Descartes' provisional code, obey laws, be firm, conquer yourself, seek truth, encapsulates a common sense morality that many people instinctively follow. It's striking how he essentially says, in action, follow the tried and true virtues, honesty, fortitude, self-discipline, even as you internally question everything. There's a lesson there about intellectual radicalism paired with practical conservatism, which one might argue is a morally responsible way to handle radical doubt. In more concrete terms, Descartes has been called the father of rationalism, and rationalism in ethics emphasizes principles that can be known by reason. Later philosophers like Spinoza and Leibniz followed his rationalist lead, though they disagreed with some of his ideas. Developing ethical systems based on almost mathematical reasoning, even the opposing camp of empiricist philosophers, Locke, Hume, who stressed experience and sentiment, defined their positions in contrast to Descartes. Immanuel Kant, in the late 18th century, synthesized some of Descartes' rationalist legacy by insisting on the supreme moral law discernible by reason, the categorical imperative. Kant also credited Descartes with awakening him from a dogmatic slumber, meaning Descartes' skepticism and clarity jolted Kant into critically examining the grounds of knowledge and morality anew. As we picture Descartes in his final scene, perhaps in that chilly Swedish library, politely bowing to Queen Christina after a lesson on the nature of the soul, we can appreciate the personal moral qualities he exemplified: intellectual courage, honesty, and dedication. He dared to ask questions nobody had asked in quite the same way. He was honest about what he found indubitable and what he didn't. And he dedicated his life to seeking truth, even if it meant alienation or risk. These are moral qualities of the inquiring mind. Descartes believed that by using our reason to the fullest, we were in a way obeying God's plan, since he thought God gave us reason for that purpose. And also achieving the greatest possible mastery over ourselves and our world, which for him was key to happiness. As he wrote in one of his letters, true philosophy teaches us to be the masters of our own mind, and thus to live in contentment. In Descartes' story, we see a man who combined skepticism with faith in reason, who left the ease of unexamined belief to venture into uncertainty and emerged with a new clarity that has illuminated human thought ever since. Thank you for joining this exploration of René Descartes, mathematician, philosopher, and moral thinker of the early modern age. His life reminds us that sometimes, to build a sturdy house of knowledge, you must tear down the old shaky structure and start from the ground up. And that in the realm of morality, clear reasoning and firm principles can serve as a compass through even the darkest of doubts. Until next time, je pense, donc je suis. Keep thinking, and you will continue to be and to grow in understanding. Stay thoughtful and keep questioning.